Blog Talk Radio.
Well, happy Friday, everyone. It seems like it's been forever since I've been on, and it's only been 2 weeks where I was celebrating my husband's 64th birthday last week with a bunch of friends, and it was a very relaxing evening, but I'm so happy to be back on the air with you guys tonight. I decided for the topic, if anybody really knows me and has actually been able to take a tour with me, one of my most favorite haunted locations in the world that I've been to is Historic Palmyra, which is a series of 5 buildings in Palmyra, New York, which is just in the neighboring county of Wayne County, probably 20 minutes or so from Rochester. And it is a very unique location, but the spirits and the history is just phenomenal. If there was a place that I would only be allowed to go to for my investigations and to converse with the spirits, this would definitely be the place. And the staff there at the museum, Bonnie and all of the other wonderful people that volunteer their time there, do a great job of leading you through each of the buildings and telling you the history of just everything Palmyra and everything that these buildings have to offer. That's during the day, but at night you can take a tour, purchase tickets, and at the block of, I believe, 3 or 4 hours that you get to tour these buildings after dark and really learn about the other side of their history. So I want to talk about tonight the history of 2 of the buildings at Historic Palmyra, and then I'm going to tell you the ghost stories and the spirits, not really ghost stories, but the spirits that live there and about them and some of the experiences that people have had. Now, if you're not familiar with Historic Palmyra, the main building is located on Market Street at 132 Market Street. And that is actually a old building that was built in 1826. And it was the St. Hotel and the Riffenberg Saloon that until around 1972, the building was located on William Street, which was directly across from what is now a parking lot from its present location. And they saved it from the wrecking ball when in the 70s, country went through a humongous urban renewal where old buildings were torn down so that new buildings could be put up, which makes no sense at all. You're going to tear some perfectly good building down to place another perfect building on top of. They were able to save this building. They placed it at the location of 132 Market Street, where it is now. However, where it was placed has a tragic history and is actually responsible for several of the ghosts that call that building home. Now, in the early 1960s, 132 Market Street was actually 3 separate little properties. And on each property was a small little bungalow. And in one of those bungalows was a family, the Breeden family. They rented it. And Paul and Ruth, or Anna as she was called, lived in this little tiny bungalow with 6 children. And the 6 children were Susie, Sharon, Samuel, Dennis, Mitchell, and Marion, who was called Eddie. That was his nickname. There wasn't a lot that was known about the family before the tragic event. The children were well-behaved. The family was quiet and respectable. There was never any reason to look at them any way other than it was just a beautiful little small town American family. Paul was a traveling salesman, and he would take trips that would take him all over the country. And at the time of the tragic event, he was supposedly in Chicago, where he was looking for a new home family. They were going to move there because of a better opportunity for him. At 2 o'clock on December 21st, 1964, the house was decorated Christmas. The Christmas tree was up. I'm sure that aside from the presents for the children from Santa, that they were probably little gifts underneath the tree to set the tone of, you know, the holiday and how excited the children had to have been with their stockings and everything, just waiting for the arrival of Santa just a few days later. But that wouldn't be the case. In a flash, right around 2 o'clock in the morning, the house was completely engulfed in flames. In fact, it was such a raging fire that it didn't take long for the two bungalows next to it to catch fire as well. Now, there was a crowd of people, like fires usually draw crowds. People are curious to see what's going on, to witness and make sure that their neighbors were okay. People stood there with just in disbelief at how fast the fire had spread. And they kept looking because there was a huge crowd of people, but they kept scanning the crowd to see if they could find Anna and the children. And they didn't see them, but the firemen and the policemen, as they were fighting the fire, thought for sure that the children and their mother had escaped the flames. They were just lost in the crowd. And being all the commotion and in the middle of the night, that would be an easy assumption to make that they were just kind of keeping to themselves, trying to just take in what had happened. Now, it wasn't until morning came and all of the smoke that had been made by the fires cleared that they really realized what had happened. All that was left after the fire, the three little bungalows were completely destroyed. There wasn't anything left but one single chimney. That's all that was standing, was one chimney. Everything else had been reduced to ashes. And each of the bungalows had a little basement. And the firemen were combing through, you know, how they investigate, trying to see what the cause of the fire was and everything. They went into what was the Breeden's basement. And they found the body of Anna huddled over Sharon, Susie, Dennis, and Mitchell, as if trying to protect them from the fire and the flames, giving her life for her children. Unfortunately, the four that the mother tried to save perished as well. Oh, but remember, there were six Breeden children, and she was only shielding four. So where were the other two? There was still a hope that maybe little Eddie and Samuel had escaped without their family, but that they were just scared and hiding somewhere because they were the two that were always together. But that wasn't so. They continued to comb through, and as they removed the remains of Anna and her four children that they could find, they began to lose hope for Eddie and Samuel. And it wasn't until the next day that the bodies of Eddie and Samuel were found. And they were found under a mattress that was just feet away from their mother and their siblings. And the heat of the fire, they say, was so intense that it dehydrated the boys' bodies to the point that they thought they were dolls. They didn't even think that they were the children. Now, the cause of the fire, still to this day, has not been discovered. People say that Paul Breeden, the father, was not in Chicago as he was reported, that he had actually been right there in Palmyra while the fire was destroying his family and destroying the home, taking the lives of everyone that you thought that he had loved. People say that they saw him and that the reason why he was there is he was trying to free himself from the burden of his family, that he had found someone else. And the only way that he could go on with his life with this other woman was to, he thought, get rid of his family. Others believe that he was so distraught over the news of their deaths that he had to be sedated. But some believe that he had to be sedated because he had an overwhelming guilt for what he had actually done. Now, charges were never filed. They never found any evidence of what caused the fire, though they do believe that it was an accelerant that was used because of how quickly the flames had spread and how intense the fire had gotten. Now, Mr. Breeden passed away in March of 2010, and one has to ask themselves, did he pass away with a clear conscience, and where did his spirit end up? Now, as you can understand, when you lose seven lives, especially of them being, six of them being children, between the ages of 2 and 8, that's the age span of the six Breeden children, there was a packed church at the Presbyterian Church on Main Street for memorial service. And then the bodies of Anna and her six little children were sent home to her family in Tennessee, and the children were laid to rest with their mother at the Jefferson City Cemetery. Now, have been taken 700 and some miles away to Tennessee, but they do believe that their spirits remain at 132 Market Street. Anybody who has had any experience at Historic Palmyra will hear and feel and see that the children are still there. Sometimes you can hear the little footsteps of children running throughout the building. You can hear laughter. Definitely, you don't see the sad side of it. You do see the happy side of the lives that the children had. And as with most children, Christmas was their favorite time of year, and they did miss out on their Christmas celebration. And every year for the last, let's see, 1972. Every year since the museum has been in existence, we'll say, so I don't have to do the math on a Friday at 7:15. Bonnie, who is the director of Historic Palmyra, and all of the volunteers place little stockings for each of the children on the mantle. They have their names on the fireplace. And very fitting that the fireplace where their stockings are in the fireman's room of the museum, which just shows that the firemen cared so much when they were looking for the children, that would be the perfect place for the stockings and for those memories to be with the brave men that tried to heroically save their home and were so taken by the death and so affected by the death of the six little children. Now, at Christmas time, you do feel the excitement in the air, and people do bring Christmas presents to them, and they put the toys that they are given upstairs into one of the exhibit rooms. There are 26 rooms in the building that was part of the St. James Hotel. And the guest rooms are still there, and they're filled with different artifacts and different themed rooms. Now, they have a toy room up on the second floor, and that's where all the toys that children receive will be. And they also have a doll room. Now, Penny tells anybody that a paranormal investigation is interested in the paranormal. Dolls are the absolute worst. People hate dolls. Old dolls are the worst. You can sit there in a doll room at Historic Palmyra, I swear, in the dark. And you don't know if it's your mind playing tricks on you or if it's actually happening. But it seems as if the eyes and the heads of these dolls seem to follow your every movement. I can tell you that the many, many times that I've been there, that is the room that I absolutely hate and avoid with a passion. Now, some of the other rooms that they have is they have a Civil War room that has Civil War relics from local Palmyra residents, a medical room, a mourning room, a religious room. And each room is unique. It has each piece that is in each room is also unique, and it has its own little stories. And as we will probably talk about in future episodes, that items will also hold spirits and energy and stuff. So the thousands and thousands of items that they have in the museum, some of them actually have an energy attached. And in particular is the medical room. It's not one of my favorites just because it interests me, the subject matter. But if you stand in the center of the medical room with your hands stretched out, they will get a tingly feeling that will run through it. Now, there isn't really any explanation on why standing in the middle of a room just filled with old things would cause a tingling feeling to run through your arm and through your body. Now, perhaps it's the energy left behind by somebody that was treated by one of these instruments that you would not see a doctor use today. Some of them look like torture. So it would, if items do hold the spirit of people, then it would actually some kind of energy from someone who was operated on with this medical equipment, I'm going to use air quotes, still attached to it, and that would affect people. Now, there's a mannequin hand that at one time was stored in a room down the hall, and it would have a habit of flying from the closet shelf that it was attached to, the where it was resting, to the floor below. And then the musical instruments in the religious room have been known to just start playing on their own. I've had a couple experiences in different rooms of the museum, the main museum building, and it doesn't look like I'm going to have time to talk about the other building this week, so we're going to move on to that one next week because it won't do justice to rush through it. And I have so much more really cool experiences to talk about the main museum. Now, they have a tool room, And the tool room is filled with old tools from the 1800s, wooden planes and cast iron hammers and things like that. Just stuff, manly stuff that people would use on the farms, which were prevalent. Palmyra was a farming community. So there is just a plethora of old tools in this room. Also in this room is the doorway to the attic. The attic, you say. It's an attic. It's an attic filled with old relics that had one point been displayed in the museum or have not yet been displayed in the museum that have been donated by some of the residents of Palmyra. And I do recall one instance where I was in the building at night doing a group tour, and every time we walked by the tool room, the door to the attic was open. So we would walk into the tool room, close the attic door, continue on, walk by the tool room, attic door open, walk into the tool room, close the attic door, go by it again a little while later, open again. Now you say, well, it's an old building. It could have settled. It could have just not be latched. We checked it. Trust me, when a door opens three times by itself, you check to see if it caught. Now you have just a ton of interesting artifacts in their exhibits, and I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that the present building was moved from William Street to Market Street on top of, exactly on top of the spot where the Breeden's home had once sat. And you can go into the basement of the museum, not mostly during the day tours, but the night tours. You would get the opportunity to go into the basement, which everybody knows basements are creepy. Old basements are really creepy. Basements where the bodies of seven people, even creepier. However, bits and pieces of their belongings are still mixed into the dirt floor of the basement of the current Historic Palmyra Museum. In fact, they had done at one point a small archaeological dig with some children, because last year they didn't do it, but they had an archaeological summer camp where they could go to the different places on the property and do a mini archaeological dig. And one of the first years they did it in the basement of the Historic Palmyra Museum and found bits of bone. Now, I'm not sure how they sent them out to get tested. And as many times as I've been there, I just completely forget to find out if they ever found the results, if they were human or animal bones. But it lends a little bit to the imagination that perhaps that could be part of the reason why their spirits are there, because not all of them are where they should be. But that's just speculation. That's a little bit of thought for you to have when you're potentially visiting the Historic Palmyra Museum. Now, they do ask for donation for their day tours to help pay for the electricity and any other programs that they do offer. And tickets are required for the nightly investigations, and you can book them with your friends. It's a great night out. It's a great way to experience a piece of Finger Lakes history and just see it in a different light. And if you get the chance and can head out there at Christmas time, take a few gifts out to the children. They will definitely enjoy it. I'm sure that even in the afterlife, they have not lost love for Christmas and the holiday season. Now, we definitely do not have time to talk about the William Phelps General Store, so that's going to be next week's topic. Only because this, it's a crazy, crazy place with such a wonderful history, and it can fill a half an hour by itself, just like the historic Palmyra Museum's main building has. Now, I forgot to tell you one thing. I did tell you that it was the Rutherford Saloon, but I did not tell you that hundreds of thousands of people cross the threshold. And if you look at the floors in the front room, which was where the saloon was, you can actually see the floor is worn from the feet of all of the hundreds of thousands of people that crossed through there, whether they stayed in the rooms or they were just transients that were stopping in for a drink. It has been rumored that a prostitute or two did call the hotel home. And as with most places when the canal was built, it was part of the Wild Frontier in the 1820s. Palmyra, Rochester, and all of those little towns along the canal, they were just like the Wild West. That was the Wild West at the time. But you can find just one documented murder where someone was stabbed to death at the bar. That's it. However, there is a lot of activity there. So I just wanted to make that point that you can notice when you visit historic Palmyra, the main building in the front room, you can notice that there is worn marks, the floor is worn from all of the people that used to stay there and visit. So that is one half of historic Palmyra. Sadly, General Store, but that I'm equally excited about. So I'm just going to let you know a couple things that are going on for these old bones. Tomorrow at, of course, under the Apple Tree Antiques and Gift Shop, there will be a local author book signing, and we will have four other authors besides myself that are going to have their books there. Perfect time to buy a Father's Day present or some summer reading for you or the kids. So come out to Under the Apple Tree tomorrow from 10 to 4. You won't be disappointed. The weather's going to be a little gray and rainy, so what else is going on? Come out, talk to some of the great authors that are going to be there, and pick up a few things for the summer. Also, on Monday at 6 p.m., I will be giving a Zoom talk for the Rochester Public Library. So if you go on to the Central Library, that is Monday at 6 p.m., and we're going to talk about stories that have been ripped from headlines. I promise it will not be disappointing, and it's going to be about 45 minutes long. There's a 15-minute question-and-answer session at the end, and I hope that you guys all be participating in that event. You know how I just love to talk about local history, and Thursdays, I got 10 seconds left. Thursday, Gregory Street, South Wedge Farmers Market, and there every Thursday. And we'll see you there. Good Friday night, and I will see you again